Perfect. Well, I'd love to start with you sharing the press notes, the reason behind the title. Would you mind sharing that with me right now? I'd love to hear that story again.
Well, I was listening to Bob Dylan. I was going through a Bob Dylan phase, which happens a lot because I really love Bob Dylan. I was listening to his song "Just Like a Woman," and in the beginning lyric, he says, "Nobody feels any pain tonight as I stand inside the rain." And I heard that, I thought that the image captured the main theme of my film, which is this idea, and I think it should be open to interpretation. But for me, it's like a metaphor for bipolar itself, because you could be in the rain and drenched, soaked and feel miserable, or you could be in the rain and soaked and you're euphoric or you're happy. And so I saw that as like kind of a metaphor for bipolar disorder, because with bipolar you could be depressed despite everything around you going well, or you could be in a better space, more mentally healthy. And it's actually a lot of fun. So, but I want that to be open to interpretation.
Very nice. Aaron, one of the elements, speaking of music, I love the choices and the music and the backing of the film, but also one of my favorite scenes is when I think it's your first walk with Emma's character after the coffee scene, and you play a song. Can you talk about the music in the film and your choices in that? I love those parts of the film.
Well, for that scene, I knew that I wanted to have like a long walk with music. I don't remember if I had plans on making the music go from diegetic to non-diegetic, like from playing from his phone to all of a sudden it's playing from the soundtrack and then back to the phone, if you know what I mean. I don't remember if that's the way I planned it. I might have planned it where it was just coming from the phone. And in the script, I had them listening to "Going to California" by Led Zeppelin. And on set, when we shot those, I would, literally play that Led Zeppelin song on my phone, so that when we were walking, we were, getting the feel, the vibe from that song while we were walking. But I knew that we were gonna have to find deeper music. Led Zeppelin, said like it would cost like $130,000, and it was like 1 in 10 chance that they would actually let us buy it or whatever. But I knew that we had to go find other music for that walk scene. But I didn't know. But on set, I didn't know. But I just used, like I said, I used "Going to California" just like to set the mood on my phone. But we did ADR, changed all the sounds. So like, it's not the phone sound is not competing with the song and the editing. And I really liked, worked with music supervisors. They gave me a bunch of options, and that song, "Paper Moon" by Walking Shoe, really stood out to me as the clear favorite for that thing.
Very nice.
I think it's a really nice song.
Yeah, definitely. So I've got to ask, how did the cast come on board? What was the order? I mean, who was on board first? And then it's a terrific, amazing cast.
Thank you. We did, with my casting directors, we did Orpheus Group casting. A month and a half of auditions with, 3 days a week, all day. So we did auditions. That's how we found Ellen Tolin, who plays the lead actress. And she's really nice and lovely, and it was, I feel very lucky that I got to work with her. And she's a good friend now. Rosie Perez, we went straight out to her, and she read the script, and she loved it, and then she wanted to speak to me on the phone, you know, one-on-one, and I did that. I was nervous when I was talking to her, because she hadn't said yes yet, so I was, like, very nervous. I felt very starstruck to speak to hearing her on the phone. She had a distinct, you know, accent, Brooklyn, Puerto Rican accent. You can't mistake it for anyone else. And I was, like, very starstruck. And we also, you know, we made smart decisions going out to Paul Schultz and Catherine Curtin and Eric Roberts. You know, we thought Eric Roberts would be hilarious as Monty, and I was glad that he was able to get the humor out of it, because a lot of actors that we were auditioning for Monty, like, were not getting the humor. So luckily, Eric Roberts came on board for that. And I also thought it wasn't even my idea of casting directors, but to go to Donald Walling for the Lyft driver guy that my character gets into a fight with. It was kind of like a dream come true, acting in a scene with him like that, because, like, I, you know, watched the Chappelle Show religiously, and I watched, you know, every episode many, many times, and Donald Rawlings was always in those skits. So it was so cool to be in a scene with him, and I think he's hilarious. He's so funny.
I've got to ask, on top of a great cast, you do a lot of the work, but you've also got a couple of other Fishers involved in the film. Your cinematographer, your producer. How much of this was a family project?
My father is one of the executive producers, and I couldn't have made the movie without him. He was crucial. I mean, like, he also got the Steve Rashan of Killer Films on board. So, like, that. And Steve Rashan loved the script, and she said, I'm for it. And so having her on her name, you know, having her on our side, basically, you know, she's one of the executive producers, and we're associated with Killer Films. It made the script much more legit also for going out to stars. It made people think the film was more legitimate, if you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
That was important. So in that sense, you know, the family thing mattered. And also, my brother is an amazing cinematographer, and I can work in a shorthand with him, because we've made so many student short films before this together. Where I was also the writer, director, and then the actor, and stuff like that. So I couldn't have made it without my brother either, because he's just very talented, he's excellent at what he does, and when I'm acting, I'm like, you know, I'm playing the scene, I'm not analyzing it as like a director, because I would take me out of the scene, and I'd be stuck in my head. So when I temporarily stop being a director and I start being an actor, like, it's very helpful to have my brother being temporarily standing in sort of like as the director. But because that makes any sense, I couldn't be director and actor at the same time. I'd have to toggle back and forth. So I'm an actor, and then cut. And then I'm a director, and then action, I'm an actor. If that makes any sense to you?
Yeah, no, definitely. You needed the trust factor, and I think it works. I think the scenes that you're in are great. I've got to ask, location wise, I was kind of amazed at how many locations there are. You know, from the strip club to the
so many.
Yeah. How did you land so many great places, and how long did you actually shoot for?
We shot for about five and a and a half or 6 weeks. Wow. 5 days a week. Well, I guess, you know, our producer, George LeFou, and our cast, you know, our main location scout and people working with him, I guess they all did a great job. But it's not easy shooting indie film with so many locations because it adds so much more to the budget. Because also when we do company moves to other locations, you know, the crew is being paid by the hour while we're, you know, moving and not shooting. So it really makes everything a lot more complicated, much more expensive. It was difficult. We'd have to find areas that were, like, near each other. And we'd have to find things, like, I mean, there was all kinds of necessities. And the very last scene in the movie, though, I scouted out the street myself. I, like, walked around Park Slope. I was like, this is the street. And we got it. So that was cool.
When you were writing the script, I know so much of it is obviously based on your own life, but was there any other inspiration you found in film or books or anything that kind of helped guide the story? Was there...
When I started off writing the script, I didn't know it was going to be loosely autobiographical at all. If anything, I wanted stay away from that as much as possible, honestly. But I set out wanting to make a film like The Graduate, because I really loved the film, and I was feeling like Benjamin Braddock from The Graduate. I was just kind of graduated from college, and nothing is going on. I felt trapped, you know, like him. And I wanted to write, and I knew I had a story to tell, but I didn't know what the story was. But I found out later that it really was the autobiographical story that I wanted to tell, because, you know, it was very, very therapeutic to, you know, to reenact the most traumatic, shameful, horrifying, embarrassing moments of my life, and, you know, reenacting it and making it a movie, from writing to directing and acting and editing. I edited it too. It was actually strangely therapeutic doing that all, because now, like, I took all that negative energy and sublimated it, and I was able to make something that people like. And actually, some people have come up to me after screenings at festivals, like, crying. And they were telling me, like, thank you so much for telling this story. It's such an important story for people to see. And, like, I had no idea that was, you know, I was just trying to tell, like, an autobiographical story. I had no idea it was going to be, like, you know, touch people that in that way. You're asking for, how did I get inspiration for it?
Yeah, no, the Graduate, I think, is the perfect... That's kind of what I thought of, especially with that last shot. I thought that was definitely, you know, a little bit of homage that you were giving there. I'm kind of curious, how long did it take you to write the script? I mean...
It was 3.5 to 4 years. I can't... Some of that... Because I was also writing while we were in development. Constantly revising the script, and then on set, like, after shooting, I would be constantly revising the next scene. Like, you know, I had to keep emailing them out, and I forget the name of the department, but they'd have to, like, pay out fresh size for everyone because I kept changing the script. But I really never stopped writing, and the film took 4.5 years from start to finish. So I think the writing was, like, technically between, like, 3.5 or 4 years.
So I've got to add...
And also, it was my first feature script, so I had to learn how to write a script while writing it, if you know what I mean? Because, I mean, there's a first for everything. But if you haven't written a feature script, you know, that you really wanted to make it good, like, I mean, obviously you could write something really quick, they might not necessarily be great. But this is the first script that I wrote, feature film length, that I took seriously, and I had to learn. It forced me to learn how to write a feature script, because before that I didn't know how.
I'm curious if you've got something down the pipeline. Basically, what's up next, or are you still searching for that next storyline?
I can't. It's too early to say, but just know that I've been telling people, I ordered 60 books on Amazon. They're all like sci-fi novels. And I'm doing research, so I'm doing a lot of reading.
Very cool. Well, Aaron, I really enjoyed the film. I kind of would love to, like, a last question would be, you have some funky shirt choices and the wardrobe choices in the movie, clothing-wise. How much input did you have in creating Benjamin's look?
Right. So, I discussed this, in a lot of detail with the costume designer. She was great. Zinnia. I told her that, in my manic state, I wanted the clothing to be brighter colors and weirder. Different colored socks, sandals, tank tops, and all this stuff. Because people who are manic people who are manic tend to dress in kind of funky, weird ways because they feel so inspired. So they like, oh, I'm going to wear this and that, and it looks so cool, So the people who are manic actually do dress kind of crazy sometimes. So I wanted that to show, reflect his being manic, his manic episodes and hypomanic episodes, and I told her that Benjamin Glass's his clothing later on in the movie should be more normal, to show that he's getting more mentally healthy, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, definitely. Very cool.
And, because that really does happen. It happens to other people, but also for me. In the past, I've had manic episodes where I'm wearing the strangest clothing. What the hell is that person wearing? And then I see a picture of it or something like that. And this manic episode has passed, and I'm back into depression. And I'm like, what the fuck was I wearing? When you're manic, you do so many things that you think are cool and funny, and then when you're not manic, you end up being very embarrassed. Oh my God, I can't believe I said that. I can't believe I wore this. I can't believe I did this and that. I must have sounded like such a fucking psycho. When you come out of the state, you're very embarrassed and regret it.
Wow. Well, Aaron, thanks for the time, buddy. And I hope, we get to see this future sci-fi film coming out soon too.
Yeah, or TV show. I'm not sure about movie or TV show yet.
Very cool. Well, thanks so much, buddy.
All